Thanks for tuning in to the Life in the Front Office podcast presented by Suja Organic, where we inspire, educate, and provide advice and insights around those who are in the sports business and entertainment industry. Please follow us on LinkedIn and Instagram at Life in the Front Office. And don't forget to follow and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts. Lastly, get your 15% off Suja at sujaorganic.com with the code LIFO, L-I-F-O. And enjoy today's episode. Welcome to today's episode on the Life in the Front Office podcast presented by Suja Organic. Excited for our industry insight series here with the Clubhouse. And we're going to get into it with our two guests today, and Adam Tuval and Lindsay Strauch. We're going to talk a little bit about partnerships, where the world of not only sponsorships, partnerships is going, but the data side, the athlete side, the brand side. And we'll get into it nonetheless of not only those things, but also how Adam and Lindsay got into their career paths and how they got to where they are. So nonetheless, welcome.
Happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
So Adam, we were talking a little bit about just before the podcast, kind of where you're from. And you're like, well, I don't know, two countries, six states. You know, that seems to be a common thing among people in the sports world, is, you know, they're at least moving around a little bit. You said you're now in Chicago for six winters, so you found a home a little bit. You know, Lindsay, you said you're in Cleveland. We'll get to that. But just talk a little bit about how you got into sports and where how the moves have kind of given you perspective along the way.
Yeah, no, appreciate it. So I'm originally from Israel. We moved to the United States when I was very young. My dad was in sales, surprise, surprise, always in the medical electronic space. So we did quite a few moves growing up. We did Virginia, Boston, Southern California for many years. And then the 08 crash brought us back to Boston. I really had no clue what I wanted to do coming out of college, going into my senior year. So I'm a failed athlete, a number of sports, probably the least athletic person in my family, but it's been my passion since I was a kid. Can always tell you who won the World Series or the NBA championship, what year, who played, sometimes even the final score. And my parents were like, why don't you look into sports business? I really didn't know what that looked like. I knew I didn't want to be an agent. I didn't want to work in the front office. And I think that's kind of the misconception that that's the only jobs there is in the sports industry. So come to find out, we moved back to Boston, Newton, Massachusetts, one of the suburbs right outside. And you know, I figured out UMass Amherst has one of the top sports management programs. I'll say the best. I know a lot of the people that are listening from Ohio University whatnot will say that's the best, but we can all claim the title, right?
That's right.
So sports management at UMass. And I really, what I tell people is you find out what you do want to do by trying things you don't want to do. And I think really by trial and error in the industry, come to find out that I like talking to people. I like building relationships and building partnerships as well. Those take sometimes months to years to build. So, you know, through trial and error and consistency and trying to be an expert, now 11, 12 years later, still in the industry, very humbled to still be here.
Lindsay?
Yes. So a few similarities, a few differences. I will say where my path is, which is rare. I have always worked in Ohio within this area in the sports world. So I think that's very rare in our industry. I've been very grateful to be able to do that. I'm very close with my extended family. So to be able to do what I love and stay within a drive away, I feel very grateful for that. But just a little bit more about me. So yes, I played sports similar to Adam, but knew that there wasn't a future for me in playing sports. I'm very petite, which you can't tell on Zoom, but so I knew with my passion of sports, I heard about sports business and sports marketing, and I knew that's where I wanted to be. So I completely agree with Adam, trial and error. I did over eight internships when I was in college to figure out what I what I wanted to do, because there's so many different routes you can take in sports, the rec side, the business side, the agent side, and it still evolves to this day. The agency side, there's so many different avenues. So I really wanted to figure out what I loved, what I didn't. And through that, I landed on the team side. I worked on the NBA side for 7 years, and then the NFL for 8 years. So I've been very grateful to be able to work for both of those leagues and learn about them. I think what I've learned throughout the years and where I saw sports starting to evolve is when athletes really truly became their own marketing platforms. And I'm in the corporate partnerships landscape. So for me, working, having the ability to work with brands and bring things to life, to see how it has evolved so quickly from, you know, these entities in sports to people wanting to connect directly to players and feel that authentic connection. I knew that was a space I wanted to get into. So from there, from the team side, I evolved into at one team on the athlete marketing side and sponsorship, and we represent the collective players associations.
And I think what's interesting is that both of you, as Adam mentioned, you know, you don't necessarily have to work for a team right now. Both of you are at the, we'll call it the agency / multi-property conglomerate consulting.
Team adjacent.
Yeah, yeah. Team adjacent, right?
yes.
You work with all of the you know, usually either the players or the teams, you know, properties, you're working with them to help them in variety of objectives. But Lindsay, I like your point about, I used kind of what I knew about partnerships coming from the team world to then help the athletes as, you know, those platforms have continued to evolve, because it's no longer just the couple most popular athletes in that league that get the endorsement deals, right? It's, you know, you can be that much more popular in your local market now through social and digital media and different, you know, different modes. Then you get into the whole college space, and there's the NIL. That's a different episode, right? But I want to just talk about, to your point, Adam, sports adjacent, right? Or team adjacent. What is a job in that landscape look like? And how do you even find out? Like, how did you find out about those types of opportunities along the way?
Yeah, great question, Jake. I'm thinking back to my time on the team side. So to make a baseball analogy that everybody will appreciate, you want to be a five-tool athlete, right, in baseball?
Yeah.
I come from, you know, the Rainey Bernstein, the Scott O'Neill school of thought, people I've worked for over the years. And it's, I think there's team, league, agency, brand, and international. And at some point, I realized early on in my career, life is about experiences. I've moved around a lot my whole life. And I think at each point that people look to make a jump in their career, it should be intentional with what they're learning in the next role and what they're bringing in from their previous roles. So in terms of opportunities, you know, I'd been at the Sixers, the New York Jets, the Philadelphia Union. So what I sought when I made the move from the team to the agency side was being able to sell different things in my portfolio. And yes, along the way at the Sixers, we had Team Dignitas on the esports side. Same thing at the Philadelphia Union. We had an esports program that we built from scratch. We had a top performing academy in the youth soccer space in Eastern Pennsylvania. And so coming to the agency side, I wanted to find an agency and a group that can sell for different properties, naming rights, jersey patches, but also general partnerships for international rights holders. So we worked with FC Bayern Munich, top team in the globe, over 1 billion supporters. They're one of the top teams in Bundesliga every year. UEFA Champions League, doing media partnerships for them early on when I got here. And so each day is different. We talk about how we bucket out our days, and you know, one day I could be trying to find the Minnesota Twins jersey patch partner. Another day we're finding partners for the LA Coliseum and the Hollywood Bowl. Then another day we're now working with some of the World Cup host cities, in particular New York and New Jersey's partners for the 2026 World Cup. So for me, it's all about how can I bring different learnings and then being able to pivot. You know, a prospect that we originally sourced for the Minnesota Twins might be a better fit for Major League Rugby and vice versa. So it's being able to pivot, whereas in previous roles, it's Are you a fit for the Philadelphia Union? Do you like Philly as for your business to grow? Do you like soccer? If it's a no and a no, there's not really a fit. Whereas now, in terms of what Lindsay and I do on the agency side, you know, we always say internally, there's always something we can sell someone. There's always a solution, a fit. So if it's a no for one property, it might be a yes for another one.
I think one of the unique things is you're, Adam, as you're reaching out to brands or however that process might work, our colleagues that are doing that, it's coming from someone who's not a team, right? So it's like, as the brand getting that email or getting that note, and they're like, what is this versus an actual note from the Twins or yeah. Bayern Munich, or right? Like, how do you differentiate yourself and make sure that there's an education process of like, this is who we are and this is what we do? Lindsay, I would imagine the same thing at one team, right? Like, there's a whole education process of, if you're reaching out to someone goes, what's One Team Partners, right? And then once you get on the call, I'm sure you're fine, right? You can explain it and they're like, oh, okay, right? But how do you crack that ice before you know, you get to that conversation?
That's a great question. And you're 100% right. I think a lot of it is education. And to, you know, A, what we are. We specifically are very unique because we not only represent individual athletes, but we represent the collective player associations, which is something new, and we help commercialize their group rights as a whole. So for us, I think, yes, there's definitely an education on what we do and how we can help based on the tools that we have. But at the end of the day, the goal of what you're doing and trying to solve their goals and objectives, hit KPIs, show return, that is the same across the board. I've never met a brand where, you know, they don't have to show the value of what we're doing. And so going into that with, it's just really getting to understand the brand and understand, because we know the tools that we have and we can be the experts in those tools. Same as the brand. The brand knows they're their own experts, obviously. And so what we do is we learn about, we try to learn everything we can about them. And then using, you know, understanding their goals and then hitting those KPIs and showing the return, that is, you know, that's what you want to do in every partnership.
Adam, anything to add there?
No, I mean, Lindsay nailed it perfectly. It's we've all worked for teams, worked around people, and it's, you hear about sell the dream, service the nightmare. You never want that to happen. You want to be an expert and immerse yourself in that brand. And then when that sale happens, you want to be a part of that renewal process, because no one's going to know why that partnership happened better than you and the marketing services person and the consulting valuations team. So we tell people we want the investing brand to hold that team and that rights holder accountable. It's a partnership. It's not just a sponsorship. Look at the billboard. Let's figure out how many eyeballs saw that sign. Now more than ever, brands, because there's so much clutter in the marketplace, they're really holding the people they invest with accountable to make sure they are delivering a return on their investment or return on their objectives year over year.
As you think about you mentioned the brand piece and how brands are getting smarter and, you know, they're trying different things along the way, how can, or what's your, since you are property adjacent, what's your advice for properties on how to evolve and adjust to be able to match the brands, right? To be able to, instead of just saying, well, this is all we have, right? Do you want this or do you want that? And actually be able to be flexible and adapt to the assets that might work for a brand.
Yeah, sure. Bring back good memories to creating new assets from scratch along the way.
That's
where
right.
I've been.
That's
so,
right.
You know, coming in to a couple of my roles, you're talking to brands where obviously you want to do right by your creative team and your social and digital team. They do amazing content and they want that sold before they build stuff from scratch. I think what we've started to realize over probably the past 5 years with brands, it's building things that are custom to their goals and objectives, creating new inventory pieces, which we've done on some previous stops of mine, but also understanding what's best for them. So rather than stamping a brand on a military appreciation platform or DEI, I think it's more unpacking the why. It's reading investor relations report, annual summaries. What is the CEO saying? What is human resources saying is important to the organization and their employees? And then really digging deeper, why is that important? And how can the organization's goals align? So you're not trying to sell them an asset that maybe hasn't been touched by a brand before. You're more so regurgitating what they've said back to them. So that way it's a perfect fit based on what they've told you through a few CNA calls and discovery and pitches.
Yeah.
Lindsay, on the athlete side, with it being a little bit more, let's call it unique and new-ish, as you're getting creative with opportunities and things that you can do, what does that look like on your side?
Yeah, I'll say one thing on the way from a team perspective. I think a way that the teams are evolving in a really great way, and how just and adapting to being able to, like Adam talked about, like that hook. What is that specific customized hook that the brand can create using the team? What they've done and how I've seen it evolve is they've created the hook. And then instead of in the past, when I first started, they'd be like, oh, you need some radio ads. You need some TV ads too. Let's put those in. Now it's, you have this hook, this marketable hook, and then you use those assets to as an amplification of all of those things. So it's not so much the most dominant asset, but it's a way to these distribution platforms that they have, the radio, the TV, the social, they use that as a way to just completely amplify that hook that Adam's talking about, that you customize completely to the brand. And that's how we look at athletes as well. So they are that amplification. They are that distribution. Because we work so closely with the players' associations, what we can do for brands is we have the ability to understand their goals and objectives and reach out to and look at the athletes as a whole from a collective standpoint to see if we can help them there. But also we can look at them individually and say, to create that authentic connection to that, what we're creating. And for, if it's a pet brand, we have the ability and the access through the Players Association to identify all these different athletes that love animals, that have their own social platforms for their pets, that so when we have these athletes amplifying these stories and helping to tell these brands and deliver these brand messages, it's completely authentic. Like, they know that Juju Schuster is a completely separate social handle for his dog. So when he talks about his dog and what he feeds him, he's getting the best food. So that's a way that we have that background on athletes through the relationships that they have with their player associations to create that authentic connection, and then use them to put it on their social channels to talk about it through their lens, to do long form content and tell their story of how much they love their pets.
Yeah, I think the key there is kind of connecting the message, to your point, right? The amplification, but connecting the message to all the different platforms. The mediums aren't changing drastically, right? Like, you're still going to have radio and TV and social and digital and, you know, in stadium experience or whatever the case might be. But it's, how do you create that platform in a way where it's all connected? Adam, you've got something on that?
Yeah, I think brands want their missions to be consistent. What they're saying, they want to feel proud, because at the end of the day, the team and the agency is an extension of their brand. And as the experts, we want to make sure that the brand's investment is doing right by what their goals and objectives are. Because now more and more, we're seeing marketers make more quote unquote safer choices, I would say, with sports spends and marketing spends. So how do you really assure them that their investment is going to go a long way towards their goals, their objectives, a return on their investment, a return on their mission? And then how are we calculating it? I think on the agency side, what I've discovered, we have a whole consulting evaluations department that all they do all day is pour through data. They have spreadsheets that track how much brands are spending for different assets. We have tier one, tier two, tier three assets at different leagues. What trends are we seeing? How can we capture those trends before they're happening? And when we're reaching out to, let's say, a nonprofit, it may seem on paper, maybe not a fit for some of these higher investment assets, but now we're seeing more and more brands and nonprofits and other categories trending because this world is focused more and more on doing good rather than just pushing through consumer products or B2B products. So I think you're going to see more and more exciting and newer partnership platforms with those messages being the same all across 365. It's not just there's 82 games or 162 games. It's year round. What is the team and its players doing for the brand?
What's one thing that, Lindsay, I'll go to you first, that you've learned from the team side, that working within an organization, again, that's focused on that cyclical nature of the business, you know, going from off season to in season and off season, right? And you kind of get, I'm not say stuck, but that, like, you're in that cycle, right? That's what you're focused on. And you were focused on the renewals and then the new business and so on and so forth. What's one thing you've learned from the team side that then now you're just in a business that's 365? There is not necessarily a cyclical seasonality to it. And Adam, obviously the question goes the same to you, but what's one thing that you've taken that you're not focused on the seasons that you've learned along the way?
That's a great question. And it is. I think about that often because you hit it point on where it's very cyclical on the team side. And, but you learn to find those high key points of, you know, with the NFL, it's the draft, it's Super Bowl, it's training camp. There's never really a downtime. At least you make sure that you build that calendar to be 365 to make sure that your brand can execute on those key high moments of each team and as part of the season as it evolves. I think that's and now having that even more so with on the agency side, where, you know, for now in July, we're juggling MLB All-Star, WNBA All-Star, MLS All-Star, like everything happens in July, and then there's kickoffs to every season, all of those key touch points that you want the brand to be able to maximize exposure off of, because that's when fans are tuning in and that's when they're. So I think, you know, I've learned to make sure that we take advantage of those moments, because the, you know, you want your brand to maximize as much as possible, but also I think I guess there's not really downtime on the agency side, but I think, that would probably be the most, is just making sure that
no off season there.
Yes. There is no off season, and making sure that you're building. I think what's important to the brand is that they see that they're getting a full year of exposure. And so however that looks, I know Adam touched on this earlier, but having the ability to maximize on different leagues at different times, we no longer have to make things fit. We look at things and we're like, oh, this is what you want to do at this time frame. We have this that completely fits what you're trying to do through this vertical versus having to use one vertical that fits into to one.
Adam.
Yeah, I think Going back to my team side, and even building that foundation on the ticket sales side, it is the basics. And then working under Jake Reynolds, who's now runs the show over the New Jersey Devils, one of my first ticket sales bosses of the Sixers, 2014. It was about 80 to 100 of us all trying to make it out of ticket sales. And what he always preached was the people that are grinding and hustling and working the hardest during the season are going to see the most success in the off season. Because naturally, during the season, you have games, you have events, you have opportunities to drive urgency and sales incentives. In the off season, you just don't have that. And how do you drive that urgency? And if it's inventory and if it's placement of assets, now in the partnerships, we're being challenged more and more. So how to drive urgency, how to make people make decisions quicker, and how to make a non-transactional process a little bit more transactional. And I think what we're trying to do now on the agency side, both of us coming from the team side, it's longer sales cycles. It's more conversations. There's more departments involved. So we're trying to condense that process. I'm asking earlier on that decision maker, what other departments are involved? We want to embrace bringing finance and the CFO and everybody else in earlier, because the sooner we overcome their objections, because there's always going to be objections, the sooner we know what we're up against, and we can condense that process to make sure we're building the right partnership on the brand and the rights holders timeline. It's always threading a needle.
Yeah, I
love those explanations. As we start to wrap up the episode, I want to get your perspective on, for someone who's listening to this, who's on the team side or at a league or whatever the case might be. I loved the five-tool player analogy that you used earlier, Adam, of kind of where you could go in your career within sports. But if they're at a team and they're like, I've only ever worked for a team. Again, picture yourself however many years back. What are the things that you would say, hey, understand this, or be careful of this, or, you know, and not necessarily careful, but just like understand the landscape, or if you're not going to go work for a team, like what are the differences? Obviously there's pros and cons to every single job and place and market and all that sort of stuff. But, you know, maybe one thing of like, hey, not necessarily the grass is not greener or whatever the case is, but like, what's something that people that have only ever been at a team, 'cause again, that's all they know, that they need to know about this, we'll call it the sports adjacent landscape.
Well, you can't lose that desire to learn and to grow. That hustle and that grind doesn't stop. I know it starts with making 100, 120 calls, emails a day on the ticket sale side. In partnerships, we're now reading, we're researching a ton more. I think I come in early in the morning, I have about 10 tabs I refresh of news, I get Google alerts. And I think it's the desire to be coachable, to learn and grow. I have a lot of mentors that have helped me throughout my career, and it's not being afraid to shoot your shot and ask for advice from people, because it's a very small industry. And I think we've all done it. We've all worked at different levels of the industry, and we still have a ways to go. And we appreciate where we were 10 plus years ago. So what I would tell young executives who are maybe looking to make a move, take in as much information as you can. Reach out to folks, ask to pick their brain. Not everyone is going to answer you, but I think from taking a bit from each person's learnings, build your own brand, because then in the day, you're one of one. And I think your story is going to be different. So try not to compare yourself to someone who's your age or what level they're at or how much money they're making.
Love it. Lindsay, anything to add on to that or differentiate?
I agree with all of it. Very similar. I think, to Adam's point, and Jake, I'm sure you know too, the sports industry, as big as it is, it can seem so small. And networking and keeping those relationships is so important. That's one thing I've learned over the years. Even a few names that Adam had mentioned, I'm like, worked with him, know him. I think it's so funny. You know, in sports, things can come really full circle on how people utilize the tools that they gain through every different department. I started in group sales. I evolved to corporate partnerships because I was watching that department evolve while and on the MBA side, and I loved what they were doing with brands. And I think, you know, I think it's great to work for a team. There's so many pros. And then for me, where I just wanted to do something new. And I saw, like I said, how the marketing industry was evolving with these athletes becoming influencers. And I think there's so many skills that can be transferable to the agency side that you learn from the team side. And like Adam said at the very beginning, work ethic is number one. And we all know that in sports. We're working weekends, we're working holidays. That doesn't change on the agency side. And so to keep that mentality while continuing to enjoy it, everything that we do at the end of the day, and why I love what I do, is because no day is the same. Even if I think I know, I could have my whole day planned and something new will pop up that I was not planned, you know, that wasn't planned. And it keeps me on my toes. And I remember it's the same feeling on the team side. You never know what the day could bring. And so like holding on to that and knowing that those skills are transferable in so many ways. And at the end of the day, really enjoy, I think, like Adam said, brands want to do good and they want to make these authentic connections. And I love being able to be a part to bring those to life and creating these moments for people through sports. That doesn't change. Whether you're on the agency side or the team side, you still get the ability to create these moments for, you know, kids meeting their favorite player for the first time or going to their very first game with their parents, whether it's in Peanut Heaven, which was my favorite memory as a kid during the 90s. You know, I think like there's so many great things, and just knowing, to Adam's point, hold on to everything that you've learned along the way, because you'll be able to use that in so many ways outside of on the team side, through agencies, even on the brand side. You can, you know, flip the role and be work in sports and represent the brand. I mean, there's just so many different ways. So take that knowledge, hold on to it, and stay connected to as many people as you can.
No, it's amazing. Lindsay, you stole one of my rapid fire questions, which was going to be, what do you grab when you first go into a stadium or a ballpark or arena? I gather that yours is peanuts. So Adam, let's start off the rapid fire. What are you grabbing when you go in?
It's easily a hot dog. My friends are listening. They know I'm a hot dog connoisseur. So it's the Wrigley dog here is amazing. The hot dog and the food at White Sox games is extremely underrated just in the sports ecosystem. So it's definitely a hot dog even before I get to my seat.
Just a quick question then. Have you ever been to Coney Island for the hot dog eating contest, if you're a hot dog connoisseur?
I have not. That is on my bucket list of just sports and entertainment events. But I do watch it every single year on TV, and I'm amazed at how those athletes just do what they do.
Fun fact, I had a best friend and a roommate who had a, we'll just call it a year or two period in his life where he was a hot dog connoisseur and decided to try one night to match the hot dog eating contest. We didn't make it into the double digits. So it's no. It's certainly a skill. Adam, I my next question was going to be, if there's one sporting event that you haven't been to that you want to go to, we'll give you another answer, but that was going to be one of them.
That's a really good question. I've been to a few really good tentpole events. I would say it is Monaco Grand Prix is one, or men's and women's finals at Wimbledon. I want to buy a nice wool suit in London custom and just wear it and just enjoy the atmosphere of Wimbledon. I still haven't been. So those will be tied 1A, 1B.
Lindsay, what do you got?
Those are good ones. It's hard. I would say deep down, my heart is in baseball, and I've never been to a World Series. I would love to experience a World Series Game 7.
That is definitely one I can attest. Well, not a game seven, but the World Series is definitely a fun one to go to.
You have to make it like as epic as
That's
possible.
right. That's right. All right. Both of you mentioned you were athletes, or at least Adam said a failed athlete. But if there was one sport you could go pro in or play competitively, what would it have been?
Lindsay, you first.
Yes. Well, I played softball. So growing up, I think at, you know, being on the Olympic team, the softball team, that was always my end goal.
Growing up in Southern California during the Shaq and Kobe era Lakers, I have Kobe behind me, but I was 4'10" when I started high school. So my dreams of playing for the Lakers ended. I'm now 6'3". So I wish that growth spurt had maybe happened sooner, but I always wanted to play for the Lakers in Staples, now crypto.com arena. And that would have been my dream.
All right. Last one for you. You mentioned kind of the different sectors of the industry you can work in. Is there another area of the industry that you have colleagues in that work in, again, could be a niche sport or something of that sort, that you're like, oh, that's really interesting. I'd be curious to learn about that business. Adam?
I would say it's a role that takes me internationally, and I really have loved seeing some of these global sports drop anchors in the United States, whether it's with a Big Six Premier League club, a Formula One team. But now we're seeing more and more, and it kind of really started the drive to survive and a lot of the summer tours that our Premier League clubs are doing. It would be awesome to kind of go overseas for called 3-5 years, experience a different way of living, of doing business, and then through meetings and events, really travel all over the world and take in new experiences.
Lindsay? Ooh.
That's a good one.
Can you top that?
I know. Why didn't you ask me first? No. I think for me, that's a really great question. I think now that I've been closer to working with athletes, I think even being working within a players association, they are some of the fearless leaders I've ever worked with, and they care so much about the well-being of their players, and they fight so hard to making sure that they get what they deserve. I would love to one day be a part of that team, and specifically on the women's side. I think there's you know, still so much to do in that space. And having a daughter of my own and her being an athlete now and growing into that space, to be able to create a path for her where she feels so protected and just valued as an athlete, I think that would be I would love to more closely be in that space and work directly for our Players Association.
Adam, Lindsay, really appreciate all the insights, perspectives, advice along the way, and sharing your journeys and your career paths. As Adam said, one of one. So what's your journey separate and aside from everyone else's? Again, welcome on anytime, and thanks again for the time.
Thanks, Jake.
Thanks, Jake.
Thanks, Lindsay.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for listening to today's episode. And I just want to give a quick shout out to ScreenSkins, our presenting sponsor of the Teamwork Online webinar series, the number one branded screen protector that allows you to personalize your screen protector for custom or officially licensed designs that disappear. Get yours today by visiting screenskins.com and use the code LIFO24 at checkout for 20% off today. LIFO24 at screenskins.com at checkout for 20% off. Thanks, everyone.